G'day, mate. How's it going?
Very well, thank you, Big Hungry.
What's on the agenda? You were going to that church, aren't we?
It's inevitable. Mount Roskill Evangelical Church has got to be laid bare.
Is it a is it a nice church? Like, does it look good?
It's firstly the world's shabbiest building.
Okay.
It's one of these warehouse churches with an enormous ugly. I've been to underneath is a huge car park, and I've certainly been to garage sale underneath. And they do a lot of this fundraising by endless fundraising motions. All this has stopped, of course, during COVID-19. Mm-hmm. A lot else has
well, not of course, but...
Yeah, but the interesting thing was, initially, I could find nothing out about the church at all. And this really confused me because these days we rely upon the web. You know, somewhere or other, there is a trace of this church on the web.
Is there like a church community page where you can find all the churches in New Zealand? They're all just chatting, or is it not? Obviously not like that?
Nope, right. Not like that. A lot of churches keep themselves to themselves, and this church certainly keeps itself to itself.
Okay.
But slowly, bits and pieces have come into place, and more has come in the last 24 hours. I'm still waiting for one email promised to me by somebody from England that may provide quite a lot more information.
Okay.
I think the most intriguing information that I can find out that hasn't been discussed at all in public is that this is actually a Māori church.
Interesting. I did not know that.
No, well, this hasn't been mentioned. Of course, these days, the congregation is predominantly Pacifica, but it was originally, I'm almost 100% sure, a branch of the Māori Evangelical Fellowship. So this Māori Evangelical Fellowship was an organization set up in the 1960s by something previously called...
Hey, Peter, just one second, mate. It's a bit rustly at the moment. It sounds like you're kind
of... Okay, that's because I'm sitting in a park and the wind's blowing. Is that better?
Yeah, that's much better.
In that direction?
That's great.
All right, I'll face into the park then.
Okay.
So the United Māori Mission was set up in the 1930s to evangelize Māori who had joined Ratana. And the famous Sir Norman Perry was the key leader of it. And so it set itself up across the Bay of Plenty, essentially, was where it began, and in the Gisborne area.
Mm-hmm.
But it soon branched out and eventually broke away and formed its own church called the Māori Evangelical Fellowship. And they had branches in working-class districts in various parts of New Zealand. And there was a branch in Auckland, in Mangere, and as well as in other towns of the country. So certainly the initials MEF hang around the Mount Roskill Evangelical Church.
Okay.
And even the name Evangelical Fellowship, it's a strange name really, suggests that that's its background.
Hmm.
Now, it, however, must have been a breakaway from the church that was originally set up in Mangere and I think got demolished at the time when they were doing the initial building of the road out to the airport.
Right.
So then they seem to have either bought the Mount Roskill site in Stoddard Road or possibly one group broke away and bought it there. But I do know that the original pastor of the Māori Evangelical Fellowship in Mangere, his funeral was held from that Mount Roskill church. So that seems to confirm the connection. Now, here the plot thickens though. Because all the people who speak about the way the church operates today make it clear that there's a kind of insider group that is intensely loyal to the church. One correspondent this morning told me, I don't know, I've got no proof of this whatsoever.
Right.
Members pay $170 a month to belong to it.
Okay.
Which is not a small charge.
Yeah. Does that count as their, like, God givings or whatever you call it?
Yeah, that's right. It's their tithe.
Okay.
And that, so that's
not,
what
it's not called God givings? Just checking.
Okay, sweet. No. And so there's, a pretty strong expectation that you will pour your money into the church, which explains how that, according to the Charities Board, it has a total income of $2 million, which for one congregation is an incredible sum of money.
That's epic. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And
how big is the church? How many could it seat, would you say, in a max sitch?
Well, 300 or 400 people, maybe.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, you divide that out, and that's $4,000 a head in giving. And probably there are some who are not paying the $170, I guess. Now, the cluster at the heart of the church seems to be around a man called, I think, originally Monty Natai was the original pastor. And then after, he seems to have retired or died, and his son, Alfred Natai, is the current pastor. And then there's a cluster of families, and they live in one building area together. And that's been, there's been a couple of glimpses on television of the attempts to interview members of the leaders of the church. But they're very, very shy about appearing on TV.
Very, very embarrassed right now, hopefully.
Yeah, I would think highly embarrassed. But it is also clear that they connected pretty strongly to the it's a conspiracy.
Yeah, I was
argument.
About to say that. Do they subscribe to sort of what most of the people, like you're sort of, you're hard out Christians in that in America, you know? It's like, yeah, it's kind of our right, we'll do what we want, it's God's will, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah cool, man. Can you do that like fucking out in a desert somewhere by yourself? That'd be great.
Yeah, yes, but it's pretty significant if you're in central Auckland.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that there was an unauthorized prayer meeting after the lockdown had happened, and that spread the disease initially. And then the second thing was that bereavement, where one of the people who should have been locked, who should have been in isolation, did not observe the isolation.
Is it maybe a case of not praying enough about the COVID, perhaps?
That's what they would believe.
Yeah, fucking hell.
I mean, obviously, enormous pressure has come to bear on the church. I mean, I guess there's
Do they get a meeting from the police and go, hey, guys, what's going on here?
Yes.
Apparently, there's an armed guard there now making sure no one goes in.
That's right. So the So there's been an interesting combination of coercion and persuasion.
Mm. But it is. What's interesting is the public, like you putting yourself out in the public eye like that, man. And you're not going to need any mates, you know. Like
that's right.
We had a caller before call up and say they were driving down from the airport earlier today.
Yes.
After a sort of a night shift, and they saw a banner over sort of they'd get off at Dominion Road, and they saw like a banner on the motorway that was kind of like hand done, but not, you know, quite well done. That just said test before you pray or something like that or something. It was just like, you know, it was clearly like a fucking, hey, you guys are...
And yet there's a real group of deniers. I mean, I was traveling on a bus past Aotea Square on Saturday and I didn't stop to look carefully, but I gathered it was a demonstration forming that must have taken place around about midday.
Yeah, it was pretty hectic.
So there are a group of people who believe their liberties are being denied, and in America, of course, that's a much stronger group.
Oh, freedom is just that. That's the tagline in the States.
Yeah, that's right. And we've already talked about that church in California. We talked about last week, I think, that defied the law.
The irony of freedom killing everyone is kind of a bit buzzy, eh?
Yes, and I think when push came to shove, it's interesting that the Mount Roskill Church gave way.
Mm.
And of course, the tragedy is that this is a group of this is not a wealthy church.
Yeah.
This is a cluster of poor, highly committed people who fervently want to pray and who, by all accounts, have daily services on Sunday, every evening, and have tremendous expectations of the devotion of their people.
Yeah.
And have a destiny-like sort of sense of loyalty that they expect from people.
It's just that every once in a while, you know, things like this happen and churches seem to be less about the community they live in and more about their little community that they've created. And that's kind of the problem that I have with churches these days, whereas if it was like, if they had the aspect of we're in a bigger community, perhaps they would go go about it a different way, you know?
Yes, and I think, though, that how many people do you reckon in our society do have a sense of the bigger community?
Well, now, when all this is going down, I do. You know, it's been a real big, it's been a real big, like, shit. it's hectic. And you're all, we are literally all doing it together. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But wouldn't you agree that the second lockdown, especially extended today, it's no fun?
No, not at all. Not at all.
There's a kind of resentment that no music, no gigs, no church services, nothing.
Yeah, people are hurting for sure. It's a real thing. I'm wondering how often we can dip in and dip out and do this, you know, and at some point you have to put the importance at a certain place, you know.
And I think that's the strain. Well, is it? I think there's a particular reason why religious communities with a tremendous sense of loyalty to each other might well simply have no awareness of the implication of the community. After all, they didn't go knowing that they had COVID-19.
What they had was.
We've got to support each other.
But that's the exact issue, though. It's that type of thing where you don't know if you've got it, and that's the whole point, is to act like you do, you know?
So that's the mindset
that's trying to get through to people. But, yeah, it's a...
But if you believe that in some way God's protection means that you're less likely to have it than anybody else...
I wish I had that sometimes, but mainly for just when I look up at space, you know? I start freaking out about... everything, and then I'm like, man, it'd be cool if I just had religion where I could just be like, don't worry about it, it's all good, you know. But
and of course, the religious line takes a curiously sort of meandering position on this, because on the one hand, they say it's good to have religion, and then they're cautious about specifying the actual benefits that you get from it,
right? Yeah, well, it's unmeasurable, I guess.
Yeah, well, the community bits probably are very measurable.
Absolutely.
And I suppose it was the community bits that led people to act as they did.
Yeah, yep.
But the price was high for us all, because we're all locked down for another week.
We all kind of knew. I feel like what makes it a little bit more gnarly for everyone is we all kind of knew it was going to be a church that did this, you know what I mean? And it kind of just like it makes it all, for us that aren't really invested in the big man upstairs, it makes it very frustrating.
Yes. It is extremely frustrating to think that this group of people who believe they've got high and mighty and wonderful principles, and they end up in messing all of our lives up. And that's part of the tensions of religion in the modern world, that it's a nuisance.
Yeah, totally.
In lots of ways.
Yeah, well, that's, I don't know. Hopefully other places are getting the message from this.
I think massive lessons were learned. I mean, it was very interesting to me that Destiny, very annoyed about the lockdown, but never once broke it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, good on them.
Yeah, so they had learned that lesson from a long time ago, that you don't tangle with the law. You can threaten the law.
Yeah, well, they're always kind of in the eye anyway, eh? Ka pai, Peter. Thank you so much, mate. It's always a pleasure. We'll catch you next Monday for That's the Spirit.
Brilliant.